afternoon. I'm Kathy Lewis. Today on Hearsay, a special rebroadcast of a debate we recorded last night at the Slover Library among the three people who want to be the next mayor of Norfolk. I hope you'll stay tuned. It's an interesting conversation brought to you by our good friends at WVEC and the Virginian Pilot. Stay tuned after this news from NPR. Good afternoon, I'm Kathy Lewis, and we bring you today a special rebroadcast of a debate we conducted last night at the Slover Library among the three people who would like to succeed Mayor Paul Frame as the next mayor of Norfolk. This debate was sponsored by the Virginian Pilot, our friends at WVEC, and of course your friends at Public Media WHRO. I had the very great privilege of co-moderating this debate with my excellent colleague Janet Roach from WVEC TV 13.
Good evening and welcome to the Slover Library in downtown Norfolk for the Norfolk mayoral debate. I'm Janet Roach with WVEC TV 13.
And I'm Kathy Lewis with WHRO Public Media. Tonight's debate is a co-venture among our friends at WVEC TV 13 and the Virginian Pilot, and we're delighted to participate in it. We're going to attempt something tonight that has become a bit of an endangered species in this political season, a civic and civil debate on the issues. And we're excited about having this conversation about the future of the city of Norfolk. We'll talk about issues and we'll ask questions that we hope will help you decide who is best to lead the city of Norfolk.
All right, each candidate will make a 90-second opening statement and then we'll proceed with questions, many of which have come from citizens. Each candidate will have 60 seconds to answer the question, and we ask the candidates to focus their responses on the issues. Now, the moderators, we have the discretion to ask follow-up questions or allow rebuttals, and candidates will have 30 seconds for those rebuttals.
At the close of questioning, each candidate will make a 60-second closing statement. And the positions of our candidates tonight, from left to right, Senator Kenny Alexander, Sheriff Bob McCabe in the middle, and on the right, Councilman Andy Protegiro, were determined in a random lottery just before they stepped to the stage. Let's get started. Janet has the first question.
All right, so here we go. It was yet another violent weekend in Norfolk. The homicide rate now stands at 17, and citizens are very, very concerned. They want to feel safe. So my question to you is, what can you do to make them feel that way? What is your approach to fighting crime? And let's start with Senator Alexander.
Well, Janet, thank you for having me, and Kathy, and WVEC, WHRO, and the Virginian Pilot. And thank all of you for being here. And thank you for the question. Crime in Norfolk certainly is higher than it has been in the last 5 years. But I remember in 1991 when Norfolk had 86 homicides. That was a record. What did we do to cut that homicide rate in half? We increased police presence. We engaged in civic engagement through the PACE program. We even had strict code enforcement. But today, I think that we should go a step further. We should have raids. We should have traffic stops. We should have sting operations. And we should have more sweeps. But more importantly, we should have prevention and early intervention in the lives of our young people who are getting involved in criminal activity in the first place. Lastly, we must pay our police officers more, give them the resources and tools to make a difference in our communities.
All right, we will have Sheriff McCabe answer that question, and then Andy Protegiro, and then after that, we will have your opening statements. Okay. Sheriff.
Thank you, Janet. I'm the only 30-plus year law enforcement executive. I also have a bachelor's degree in criminology and also a master's in public administration. You know, the police department has a number of positions that are not on the street due to military leave, due to vacancies, due to injuries, and it's kind of hard to address all of the concerns on the street when you don't have all the resources. I don't know about you, but I'm tired of watching, waking up in the morning and watching and looking at the news and there's another shooting. It's just, it's not satisfactory to live in a city that's known as one of the deadliest in America. It's embarrassing and it's got to stop. And I've said enough is enough. I will be working closely with the police chief and with the city manager. Based on my experience, I think I can probably address the law enforcement concerns better than the other two candidates.
Councilman.
Well, thank you. I think that in echoing what my opponents have said, everyone is in the same position. We all believe that we can do better. And I believe this year that you will find that we have increased police pay 5 to 6% in this year's budget. But in reality, it can go even deeper than that. A lot of these crimes and murders that are being committed are the fact that people are disrespecting each other. And if you look at what we need to begin teaching, we need to be teaching respect, restraint, and responsibility. If we focus on the three R's in school, the same way we had reading, writing, and arithmetic, let's get to the basics. Let's keep the kids occupied. Let's find them internships. Let's use after-school programs. Let's go back to the basics when it comes to this. When it comes to the policing, we can all agree on the same part of it. But it really becomes more of a cultural aspect for all of us. And that really is the answer. You do it through the Human Rights Commission that I would establish, do it through grants, do it through private foundations, but we can make that happen appropriately in the future.
We give you all 3 points for flexibility and adaptability tonight because we told you you would start with an opening statement and we launched immediately into our questions. So I think we have seen so far an excellent display of flexibility and adaptability. So thank you for that. So with our apologies, let's start with those opening statements. We've already heard your positions on crime, which is certainly something that's been a critical issue in the community in recent weeks. Senator Alexander.
Thank you, Kathy, and thank you again for all being here. I'm Kenneth Cooper Alexander. I currently serve in the Senate of Virginia. I got my start right here in Norfolk as a civil elite president in public service some 20 years ago over in the Berkeley community to improve the schools there, to improve the housing stock, and to improve the workforce. Was active in the Community Housing Development Corporation and helping start a CDC, as well as a Community Development Credit Union. The city recognized my efforts and my commitment. They asked me to serve on the Economic Development Authority, and I helped assemble land, which is now Central Business Park. Later, the city asked me to serve on the Planning Commission. When the city decided to study the direct elected mayor, they asked that I would serve on that panel, that Blue Ribbon Commission, traveled around the state, interviewing mayors and councils, and even with the Weldon Cooper School at the University of Virginia for technical assistance, to present to the council the model that we currently have. As a member of the House of Delegates, the city asked that I would carry the legislation to create the very system that we have today, the direct elected mayor. I want to use my experiences at Richmond, my 10 years on the Education Committee, my years on the Commerce and Labor Committee, but more importantly, my years on the Finance Committee, to help grow our economy, to help build our workforce, to help improve our public schools, to address sea level rise in housing. We can build the middle class. We can address the challenges that we face if we work together and put Norfolk first. I'm Kenneth Cooper Alexander. I look forward to your questions.
Thank you. Sheriff McCabe.
Hi, I'm Bob McCabe. I'm proud to have been born and raised right here in Norfolk. I'm a proud Navy veteran, police veteran of the Norfolk Police Department for 12 years, and I'm currently serving over 20 years as a sheriff of Norfolk. I already mentioned about my education. I tried to get that in on the first question. In addition, I've been on the adjunct faculty at TCC in Old Dominion for the past 10 years. I'm running for mayor to bring a new set of priorities to Norfolk City Hall. When I took over the largest jail in Virginia 22 years ago, it was being investigated by the FBI and the Department of Justice. And today, we've been voted one of the best places to work in Hampton Roads by Inside Business. I want to bring that turnaround to City Hall. The number one priority, the three top priorities is our schools. Our schools have not enjoyed, I'll be kind, the best reputation. 34 years ago, I was at a Civic League as a young policeman, and there was a real estate agent employing the Civic League to please talk to the city council about doing something about our schools, because the military, before they set foot here, were told you probably don't want to live in Norfolk if you have school-age kids. That was 34 years ago. Number two, public safety. We have to get back to our community policing model. We lost 83 police officers just last year because they went without a pay raise for 6-7 years in a row. Number three is we need to be more business friendly. Norfolk's one of the toughest places to open up a business or expand a business. I want to cut the red tape to be able to help those businesses out. Thank you, and I look forward to the questions.
All right. Councilman.
Yes, ma'am. I'm Andy Protegiro, and I cherish the oaths that I've taken in my lifetime. I took an oath as a VMI cadet. I took an oath as a lieutenant when I was commissioned in the Army Reserve. I took an oath when I became a lawyer. I took an oath when I became a substitute judge. But I also took an oath when I became a councilman in 2010. In 2010, that oath says that I will fairly and impartially handle and discharge my duties as a member of the City Council. I believe that in the 6 years that I've been on council, I have handled myself in that manner. In so doing, I have been involved in the reform, as I have seen, the council. We've pushed to move our meetings when we arrived. They were done in the daytime. We pushed to move them to the evenings. We pushed with Tommy Smeagol to move our to establish television cameras in the work sessions. We pushed for a dashboard so that way you could see every city project from start to finish. We pushed for a fraud hotline so that any citizen or any person could call or any city employee could call and ask for an investigation. We pushed for body cameras on our PD. So we've done this in a manner to make sure that this city government is transparent and open. And then frankly, I was hired by the area of Ward's Corner to turn it around. And with the coalitions I've been on council, I've done that. I'm going to ask for your vote on May 3rd.
All right. Thank you very much for those opening statements. We want to go back now to questioning, and we're going to go back to the subject of crime, and you have 60 seconds for your response. All right. In the last couple of years, we've seen a lot of police-involved shootings, and 5 people have been shot by police, Norfolk police, this year, including 2 just this weekend. Citizens are concerned, and many say they feel as if though they can't quite trust the police. So how would you work with the police department to build better police community relationships? Senator.
Thank you, Janet. One of the things that we have to acknowledge is that the police are there to protect and serve. When individuals approach a policeman with a gun or with violence, the police not only have obligation to protect the community, but of course to protect themselves. We have to do a better job in educating citizens of the dangers of approaching a police officer with a gun or a weapon. Second, we have to certainly ensure that our policemen have the sensitivity training as it relates to the differences and diversities in our communities. Lastly, we should have our policemen more involved in civic engagement and community activities to build the trust and the respect for one another. Community and police working together, working in harmony to make us all safe. That's what I think we should do to increase transparency and trust.
Thank you. Sher?
That's a great question. When the PACE program, which is the Police Assisted Community Enforcement, came to Norfolk back in the late 80s, I was one of those veteran policemen that said, you know, we didn't join the police department to play kickball or to go to the recreation center and do those type things. And it only took a few couple years to realize that it really does make a difference, getting to know your community, getting the community to know the police officers, not seeing them as necessarily adversarial, but that they're human beings as well. You know, one of the things that we've been doing at the Sheriff's Office for years is we go into the schools teaching a program called Virginia Rules with the Commonwealth Attorney's Office, and it talks about civic lessons. And we target the middle age and the high school age. I started a free summer camp 12 years ago for kids targeting that teenage year and to introduce them to the law enforcement, and they're all surrounded by them. So you need to be proactive, and that's the things we're trying to do.
Well, I think that in carrying over from what I said in my opening statement and also in the initial question. First, you look at body cameras are a great equalizer for everyone, and we've pushed for that on City Council. Second, I do believe, as I'd mentioned earlier, Human Rights Commission is something that when you bring all religions together, all LGBT, all individuals who have a stake in freedom and a stake in their rights, to discuss rights of minorities and others, that's key. And so we need to establish that. I also believe that since I've been on council, we've asked for the hiring of more minority police officers to make sure, and also more senior officers be African-American and of minorities. But we also have a, Mark Askew is somebody who had mentioned a police training of young people, similar to the NROTC, similar to the Army ROTC that you have in the schools. But begin that with a police training, that, and it's just a thought, talk to the chief about, to be able to have those kids in high school learn in that manner and learn the respect that it takes to be an officer.
Well, Sheriff McCabe, I want to put the next question to you because you actually referenced in your statement the concerns among real estate agents, military people that are still happening 34 years later after you referenced the conversations that you had. And it has to do with general agreement about the fact that we need to improve Norfolk Public Schools. People are concerned about low teacher pay, about poor school performance. And so the question, which will come to all of you, but we'll start with you, is this. 1 year after you've been mayor, what will be different about Norfolk Public Schools, and how will you go about accomplishing that?
My goal, Kathy, would be that the teachers feel valued and appreciated. And right now, a majority of them don't feel valued and appreciated. Their number one concern is safety in the schools. Pay is a close second, but it's safety in the classrooms. As mayor, I would work very closely with the newly elected school board to make sure that we each know each other's expectations and goals. They run the school system, but we certainly provide a major part of it. It's one-third of our city budget. This past year was $315 million. And so instead of just taking a hands-off approach until budget time, I think it's incumbent upon us to have a ongoing dialogue on a regular basis to make sure that we're fulfilling their expectations of us and vice versa, because we need to concentrate on bringing those accreditation scores up, but it's not all about just test scores. It's about developing these young men and women to move on.
Councilman Perdue, you are 1 year after your mayor. What's different? How do you get there?
I believe that 1 year that after I'm mayor, that you'll see there'll be much more of a communication with the elected school board, at least the beginning of same. You'll see more of a focus on pre-K education as we can make it happen. After-school programs, we have internships that we have in the summer to see if we can expand those internships during the academic year. With regard to the career technical school, we'll continue to move forward with that. We've already put $1.7 million into that study and making it the governor's school, making it a regional area. And also lastly, 1 year out, more of a study into a new alternative school than the Madison School that we currently have, modeling it more on a Renaissance Academy.
Senator Alexander, same question.
Thank you. 1 year
after your mayor.
First, I think fully funding the school board's requests, their budget requests and teachers' priorities, and recruit the best teachers and pay the highest pay in the region to help improve our schools. The second part of it is student readiness. We must ensure that students come to the classroom ready to learn and that the school is not a catch-all for the social and economic ills that should be addressed by the council and by the city. Third, I think that working directly with the superintendent and the school board to ensure that the priorities are met. And last, leverage the relationships in Richmond and Washington to ensure that the funding comes. 24% of Norfolk Public Schools funding are directly related to state and federal sources.
Councilman Perdue, as you know, and I think we've talked a bit about this with all three of you, there's a concern about teacher pay, many teachers moving to neighboring school districts where they can get more salary. How do you go about addressing that?
Well, I think that to tell you how the sausage is made is really what it comes down to. Having been on council, what you see is normally the budget comes to us in a baked manner, a cooked manner. And it's incumbent on the school board to give us what I call truth in budgeting. Give us what you really need. I cannot tell you, there is somebody who runs for Ward 6, Super Ward 6, and he always says, there's only one guy who kept asking, tell me what you really need, and that was me. And so it really comes down to understanding the process. So to be able to take care of the teachers, I believe that when you have the elected school board that I had pushed for in 2010 when I first came on council, and then ultimately having it now where we're beginning that process, making sure that we have them, one, give us a true budget as to what's needed, and then that way we can make that, we can move forward with that. If teacher pay, which I agree with 100%, needs to be competitive and better than elsewhere, then we need to know that. You've got to honestly tell us what you need.
Senator Alexander, how do we raise teacher salaries?
Thank you. One, we should prioritize our budget. Norfolk's budget is $1.26 billion. 39 cents of the dollar goes to public education. A lot of that goes into the classroom. About 95% of that goes to the classroom. We have to certainly use our leverage in Richmond, as well as pay teachers for professional development and additional training. Prioritizing our budget, making education the top priority in our city's budget is the way to go. I don't agree that we should always raise taxes and fees to make it happen. When the city had a surplus last year after raising taxes to build the five schools, all of that surplus did not go into public education, nor was it returned back to the taxpayers.
Sheriff McCabe, how do we raise teacher salaries?
Well, that's where the expectations come in when we're collaborating on an ongoing basis. You know, if a teacher leaves Norfolk, they can make $7,000 a year more in Chesapeake, Virginia Beach. That's common knowledge. You know, when the city council does their budget, what I would like to see change is the priorities are you take care of your people, you take care of your teachers, you take care of your public safety, you let the city manager know that teachers are going to get their increment, that public safety is going to get their increment, that retirees are going to get at least 1% every year. Doesn't sound like a lot, but when you haven't had any in 10 years, it is something. And then you say, okay, Mr. Manager, go ahead and make your budget. Right now, they make their budget, and then what we hear on a regular basis is, well, we'd love to give you something, but there's no money left. And so that's what I talk about, setting priorities and taking care of your people. Norfolk was the only city that started paying their employees on January 1st instead of the beginning of the fiscal year, July 1st. And so when you want to talk about priorities, take care of your people.
All right. Thank you very much. We want to talk a little bit about jobs and economic development. So I'll start with this question. You know, we've had some good job news recently, in particular ADP bringing 1,800 jobs to the city of Norfolk, but 1,750 of those jobs will pay an average to 35 to 40 grand. Well, that's lower than the median income in the city of Norfolk. So how do you bring higher paying jobs to the city? Councilman, we'll begin with you.
Well, I think that, and please, I will tell you, looking at 36,000 a year, and I will tell you, don't look at it in an arrogant manner to say that that's all we're getting. 36,000 a year, and they're focusing primarily on veterans to be able to have jobs in the city, and they're focusing on Norfolk people. So I wouldn't see that in that manner. But to get jobs here, I think that you have to look at what the future of jobs. And you read the Wall Street Journal, you see that the future of jobs really comes down to entrepreneurship, it comes down to accelerators, it comes down to having an innovation district, which is really what I believe in. It comes down to a B-pole break. We have one now, the council's done that, we can do better on that, and perhaps look at extending it into the future. Look at what we've done when it comes to bringing Old Dominion is now in the downtown area with their innovation district. So that's the key. We have the opportunity and the ability to do it here, but let's focus on the small business and make that happen.
State Senator.
Thank you. Janet, a couple of things we need to do. We need to recognize that we're heavily dependent on the military. 80% of most businesses in Norfolk will tell you that they are directly or indirectly related to military appropriations. Sequestration is coming, is real. We must diversify our economy. How do we do that? More art clusters, biotechnology, cybersecurity, career technical trades is the fastest way to build our middle class and to grow our economy. We have five institutions of higher learning here in Norfolk. We have Sentara Norfolk General Research Hospital, two nationally recognized specialties. We have the only freestanding children's hospital, which is CHKD. Let's leverage our assets, healthcare. We have the second deepest port. Let's grow our port And more importantly, let's have these business districts, the technology districts, and also innovation districts to attract the 21st century talent right here in the city of Norfolk. It's the fastest way to build our economy and build a middle class.
Sheriff McCabe, we love jobs, but how do we get higher paying jobs in Norfolk?
Well, I'll tell you, Janet, you hear a lot over this campaign. It's kind of hard sometimes to distinguish between the candidates because we're all saying the same things. I like to kind of look back at, okay, what has each of the candidates done? Last year, we received the award from the governor for hiring the most veterans of any large company in Virginia. Over half of our staff of 500 are minority. And so we really go out and we do a lot of good recruitment. One of the things I would say about bringing jobs in, it's small businesses are your creators of jobs. And that's when we get back to the crime in the neighborhoods. People aren't going to come here and open up a business and or come here and go to work for a company if they don't feel safe. And so I was the first one to mention investing in high-speed broadband internet downtown. Let's connect the city services with the business community, and that's going to draw some of these high-tech jobs. We really have it going on in downtown Norfolk. It's a jewel. If anybody ever hasn't done that lately, I encourage you to walk down Graham Street. They are recruiting both nationally and internationally.
Senator Alexander, we heard from readers and listeners and viewers who had some variation of this question that we'll put to all three of you, beginning with you. And it has to do with the idea of people believing that north of 38th Street, there are essentially two Norfolks. There's the Ghent and downtown area that people believe receive a disproportionate share of development and resources. And then there's the rest of the city. The exception in this case, in this listener's view, is that East Beach is being developed by private developers. So if elected, how would you focus on North Norfolk, most especially the Ward's Corner modernization plan, which is about 14 years old now?
Well, thank you. Kathy, you may remember back in 1998, I moved one of my businesses, to Ward's Corner and have been very active in that community. And the council under Conley Phillips and under Mason Andrews really started the revitalization of Ward's Corner, and it has continued. One of the things that Norfolk gets criticized for is development of downtown Norfolk first, and a lot of the development has happened downtown. However, it is time that we turn our attention to the rest of the city. We have 80-plus unique neighborhoods, and those neighborhoods are in desperate need of economic development, and also aging infrastructure should be addressed. So certainly downtown should continue because it provides the revenue for the investments, but more importantly, attracting private-public partnerships out in East Beach. Ocean View is looking for a first-class hotel and restaurant, a flagship there, certainly deserves it. The population is there. The income is there. And as mayor, I would lead the charge.
Sheriff McCabe, how about you? Two Norfolks.
Yeah, this is the main reason I decided to run, because I love the job I'm doing now. But there's a huge disconnect between what's going on in downtown Norfolk and around the rest of the city. I can remember the last name brand hotel on the north end of town was the Holiday Inn in Willoughby on the beach. I worked there as a 12-year-old busboy. That's how long it's been. The city's done a good job of investing in East Beach and Pinewell, the Ocean View Park, but there isn't any high-end restaurants. There isn't any hotels that you can really have your family stay at. If you look at the east side, a dozen years ago, Military Circle, JNF Corridor brought in more revenue than downtown did. We have to have a thriving downtown. I'm not anti-downtown. I'm just anti-overspending for projects downtown. And so we need to look at, looking at incentives for businesses on the east side of town, on the north end of town. And this question is one of the main reasons why I decided to run. It's called changing priorities. And I'm looking at it from a common sense standpoint because there is a huge disconnect.
Councilman Fergiro?
Well, the premise of your question really is somewhat odd because when I came on in 2010, Ward's Corner, $1 million was set aside for facade improvement of homes in the Denby Park area. They were not for acquisitions, and nothing had changed. When I came on and we established a coalition with Terry Wibley, Barkley Wynn, and then I pushed through the issue of purchasing the apartments that were in the Texas streets, that was $7.25 million of city money that went from downtown and went out into the neighborhoods. And what we ended up doing was purchasing the apartments, making the improvements,
which opened up 700 new jobs in the area, $22 million of investment that came in private investment into the Ward's Corner area. So when you examine it, that can be done throughout the city, but you need to have a champion do it for you. And so what we can do is focus on 5 points, which is, frankly, to the east. Focus on Ocean View, the heart of Ocean View, which is where the park is, and make that happen. We can do that, but it takes the coalitions that I've established, and that's proof that we've made it happen already.
All right. Thank you. Question about light rail. You've all taken light rail, right?
Everybody? Yes.
Been on I ride it all the time.
Okay. You ride it all the time? All right. What would you do immediately upon taking office to further light rail to some of the high population districts in Norfolk, i.e. the Navy base or ODU, or would you do anything at all? Sheriff.
Well, that's a great question. We get that all the time. Are you for light rail? You have to be. We have it here in Norfolk. Unfortunately, we got off to a bad start when we were $100 million over budget. That kind of leaves a bad taste in everybody's mouth. I can tell you that I love the stance that the governor has put forward with this Go Virginia. It gives financial incentives to localities to do more things together. We went into a regional jail over 15 years ago because there was incentives if two or more localities got together, and that's what the whole idea of Go Virginia is. What we need to do is we need to get together very quickly with our regional partners. I think once we have new personalities on council, I think there's going to be a change. But it has to go to the Navy base. I mean, that's not even an option. It needs to eventually go to the airport. It needs to go to Old Dominion. But we're hoping that we can get Virginia Beach to take it to Town Center and get it there started.
Okay. Councilman.
Well, I think it's already on the way to Town Center because they've already voted in their past council session to extend it. But that being said, Norfolk citizens cannot accept the burden on our own. And that's really what we're doing now. So light rail really becomes the key to regionalism. So when you examine it and you look at the governor's funding or you look at the funding as it comes out of Richmond, where light rail buses all go ahead of roads when it comes to receiving Richmond money, that's the key. So don't expect that I'm going to be coming to the citizens or to the council and saying, we need to put more money into light rail and extend it in Norfolk to the beach. But why not run it as Chesapeake wishes to be part of this? Chesapeake's they've asked for their $2 million study. Run it from Volvo Parkway up Military Highway to Little Creek Road, north on Little Creek, and shoot it right to the base. We know we're extending to the beach because their council just voted to accept those funds that were set up by the state. So we're down the road, but you have to look at it in a regional manner. You cannot expect citizens of Norfolk to accept that burden on their own.
You know, light rail initially was estimated to cost $198 million, and there was $106 million overruns and another $80 million in contingencies. As Norfolk's mayor, certainly I would push to extend light rail to Old Dominion, the naval base, and the airport, relying heavily on state assistance through the Secretary of Transportation. Also, Virginia Beach and Chesapeake, as we build regionalism, certainly is important. 120,000 people driving in Norfolk every day to work, but they don't live here. Love for those citizens of other parts of the region to take light rail to the work here, and maybe they would actually move here. But to extend light rail first in Norfolk would be a priority with assistance from the state and from the federal government. We cannot share the burden alone. It's a regional project, and it certainly should be spread across the region.
I have a question here from a citizen. It's about business development, and it says, African Americans comprise nearly half of the population in Norfolk, yet they are woefully underrepresented in the city's framework of business, commerce, and economic development. As mayor, what initiatives would you take to facilitate African American business growth in the city? And we will start with Councilman.
I'll take it. I think that first let's look at what we currently have, because I think that if we were to examine one thing that we probably don't do very well in the city is communicate. So right now, if you look at our economic development office, we currently have $20 million in HUD money, $2 million in SWAM money that is available, and we have given already a BPOL break. But what can we do is What we're also doing is we're doing these business cafes. We did at 35th Street. We've gone to Five Points. These business cafes that the Economic Development Office does is to promote businesses in those areas, whether they're minority or whether they're not, but it allows that help and that incubation and that assistance to accelerate the business forward. So that would be what we're currently doing. What can we do even better? We can set more money aside, as I've said in the past, is set more money aside for minority funding of businesses and also make sure that the mentors are there, whether it's from the universities or from the city, to be able to guide those businesses along to be successful.
State Senator.
So one of the things I think that we should do is to do the disparity study, as we have done in Richmond, to see exactly how much or how less we are actually doing with women and minority and veteran-owned businesses to be able to quantify the exact number. One of the things I think that we certainly should do is to be more active in recruiting businesses to Norfolk. All types of businesses, especially in the urban areas. As we launch an urban development policy, businesses who want to partner with the city, public-private partnerships, I think is important. As it relates to building or expanding the economic growth throughout the city, certainly there are African-American businesses or minority businesses, women-owned businesses, and veteran-owned businesses would want to take advantage of the economic activity that's happening and experiencing in Norfolk. We have to be more proactive and to make sure that they know that they are welcome here in Norfolk and we're open for business.
Open up the process. That's really how simple it is. Right now, everything has to go through certain groups or certain individuals or certain law firms to be able to get any business done. And it's a well-known fact, that's inside baseball, but open up the process and let folks, you know, if I have to replace a $500 printer in my office, I have to get three bids, send it over to person, it takes about 90 to 120 days. But to open up a business or build a $10 million building, there's no bidding, they just award it. And that needs to stop. Those are the sweetheart deals I talked about when I announced back in July. There's a whole lot of incentives thrown out in a whole lot of different directions, but they never go to the minority community. They don't go to anything that goes, seems like everything is kind of geared towards town. It's real simple. Change the priorities and open up the process. You'd be surprised at how many folks will be applying.
Senator Alexander, this question, we'll ask all three of you this, but we'll start with you. I just checked the Visit Norfolk website before we came in tonight, and there's a reference that says that that Norfolk is welcoming, proud of its diversity, and its diverse LGBT-friendly community. So I wonder, would you support enacting in Norfolk laws that prohibit discrimination in employment, housing, and public accommodation on the basis of sexual orientation or identity?
Kathy, yes, and I'm proud of my record in Richmond opposing legislation that would discriminate based on a person's sexual identity, gender, race. It's has no place in our society. It hurts not only the individual, but it hurts economic activity, and it's just plain out discriminatory. So I would not support any legislation or any policy or any ordinance that would discriminate in housing, accommodation, in public places.
But would you support enacting such laws?
I would.
Okay. Sure.
Absolutely. I think we all met with the LGBT community and were asked a lot of these same questions. Real easy to answer. There's no room for any discrimination. You know, Pride Fest does a festival in Norfolk, second only to Harbor Fest, as far as the number of people that come, the economic impact it makes on our community. And so Norfolk should be welcoming to everybody. Nobody should be excluded.
Well, Kathy, I think that, and I've mentioned it in the past, is the Human Rights Commission. Virginia Beach has one. And when you can bring, not just LGBT, but, I mean, Friday I was at a mosque. Sunday I was in churches. So I believe that when you bring everybody together, talking occurs. Would I support it? I would. And in fact, it may be something that we can examine in our charter, maybe making a statement that is would make a difference and I would look at that, and then Kenny could carry it when he goes back to Richmond.
As the lobbyist for Norfolk, as mayor, I would.
Senator Alexander, let's stay with you for a moment. These next three questions, by the way, are for each of our candidates individually. You have been in the General Assembly for a long time, 14 years between the House and the Senate. What can you do as mayor that you could not accomplish in the General Assembly?
Thank you. Kathy, as you know, the General Assembly appropriates funding and enabling legislation. However, once the resources are local, it's the council that prioritize and implement the legislation. One of the things that I could do as mayor that I could not do as a member of the House or the Senate is to prioritize the city's budget to put more resources in education, public safety, and also lead the charge in revitalizing our neighborhoods. We are a Dillon Rule state. We provide the state provides the legislation and the funding, but where the rubber hits the road is closer to the people, is right here in the city of Norfolk. I will be closer to the people, closer to the action, and I will be able to implement some of the policies and some of the initiatives that I've set out in education, public safety, workforce development, and addressing our aging infrastructure.
Councilman, this question is for you. I know that you've been talking a lot about regionalism. I believe in one forum I heard you say on day one you were going to pick up the phone and you were going to call Virginia Beach and I guess see how you could work together with the city of Virginia Beach. There is a strong belief out there that if this area does not do a better job working together as a region, then the entire area fails or it does not succeed. Would you ever support a regional government?
Sure. I think that it begins, however, when you look at regionalism, it begins on the council basis, not necessarily the mayor's basis. And I say that because the councils need to know each other. The mayor in each of these places, basically one vote. That's really it. But you need to get the other individuals who are on the councils to work together and act together. And I envision a NATO-type government where we can meet at certain times, not necessarily legislative per se, but when you get to know each other, you get to work together, know each other's projects, you get to talk to one another, then things happen. But if you don't know each other and you have mayors who talk on their level, but council members who don't talk on their level, and staff who don't talk on their level, you'll never be together. But let's get together at hotels, get together at city halls that can fit us. Let's Norfolk, the beach, Chesapeake, and Portsmouth pull together at one time. Make it look like a NATO government. Now you have regional, of course, organizations, but they're only done at manager level and mayor level, and perhaps there's another person added on. It needs to be expanded and run it exactly as I said.
Did you ever see representatives being elected from all across the area forming one particular group and actually being elected?
Well, and in a visionary manner, of course. That would be tremendous. But then again, we have certain shared responsibilities with each other. We have PD that shares certain responsibilities, fire cover each other. We have certain regional trash that cover that mm-hmm. deal together in agreements. But I do see where in the future, with a vision, that as long as you have shared gain and shared pain, meaning financially, then those things can occur.
Sheriff McCabe, you've said that you want to provide free parking downtown in the evenings. I think everybody in this room probably, because we're in the evening and we're downtown, probably be all right with that. But how would you replace the revenue that parking provides? And do you know how much that is? How would you replace that?
Yes, the figure was $8 million that's been talked about for the last few months. I just found out what it was, and I got it from the Department of Finance. It's $1.6 million. That's the amount of revenue collected from garages on weekends and in the evening. And so what I called for was a pilot program. Of course, I did my little research, Knoxville, Tennessee, Boulder, Colorado, Crystal City, Virginia, Roanoke, Virginia. They started doing this. And to try and bring more people downtown, Norfolk has either the third or fourth largest sales slash meals tax in the country, 12.5%. So if we can get more people downtown, if you look at the parking garages in the evenings and on the weekends, they're half full. And the number one reason why people don't come downtown that live in Norfolk or regionally is because of the parking. So I said, why don't we try the pilot program for 1 year, compare the revenues that are generated from the meals tax and the sales tax, and let's see how we do. The one thing we're going to do is we're going to increase a whole lot more foot traffic downtown, and I see I got to stop there.
We can't have a conversation about the future of Norfolk without talking about recurrent flooding, sea level rise. There were lots of questions on this, and one questioner said, when Norfolk has its Katrina moment, large areas of the city will be devastated. This person notes that the mayor's been talking about retreat zones, potentially, where low-lying areas, homeowners will presumably have to give up their homes. We're already in the process of elevating properties and the like. So the question is, what can you do as mayor to truly prepare Norfolk for flooding? And this, that was very interesting. This person said, please eliminate the word study from your answer. So they really want to know what you're going to do. Sheriff, we'll start with you.
There's already one of those that's been funded. thanks to Old Dominion University, $120 million HUD grant. What I've talked about is we have, the city hired a resiliency officer, one of the first ones in the country to do it. And so we're already ahead of the eight ball on this based on some of the things that I'm not allowed to mention. And so hopefully we can move forward with that. I was the first candidate to say we can actually make this into an economic opportunity, make Norfolk the center for research, different word, research. We have the universities here, and because we're going to be right at ground zero next to New Orleans. And so there's a whole lot of opportunities, but right now Norfolk's done a lot of things, you know, but the things that we can do on an interim basis, which costs a lot of money, we're going to need federal money for, is permeable surfaces. We can do underwater breakwaters. We have them out in Ocean View, but underwater, to where they actually create oyster beds.
Council?
I got the stop sign.
Well, I think that what I have been saying is that you can take Nauticus, which is part of an innovation district that I was talking about earlier, and expanding it to being the world center for flooding and sea level rise. When you do that, you bring the world here. We were already ahead. The city, you know, I often tell people, I go places, I say, listen, leave your inferiority complex about Norfolk at the door. We are light years ahead of places. And when I say that, I'm talking about, you have a city that looks at innovation, that we were the, as Bobby had said, we were the first in the country, third in the world with a resiliency officer. We have a department now that deals specifically with flooding. So when you see that, and then you push Fugro, Fugro was our contractor that we brought in, and Fugro was the one who helped us figure out what to do. So what do we see in the future? I see gates at The Hague, gates at Pretty Lake. We have a $36 million berm plan now for sand at Ocean View. So we've done things, but I do see a future in it. Let's do the academic side and do the practical side together.
Senator Alexander?
The $120 million that we receive from HUD will do very little as it relates to application of gates and walls and berms, unless that money go directly to the street and not get caught up in consultants and architects and fees. It's going to cost us $1 billion to address our flooding. Climate change is real. Recurrent flooding is real. It's going to take berms. It's going to take green tops. It's going to take floodgates. It's going to take rerouting roads. It's going to take moving some existing buildings in our low-lying areas. But more importantly, we have to recreate the natural waterways that we filled to allow water to go where water wants to go. We must live with water, and we must learn how to manage it. So building the basins and the retention ponds and the drainage systems and stormwater drainage systems will cost a lot of money. We need to leverage our state and federal resources to do it. Most localities build infrastructure without state and federal money. It's too expensive to do it alone.
Thank you
so much. Thank you so much. And actually, this has gone by so quickly. We are coming to a close, and it's actually time for your closing statements. Oh. So we will begin, and why don't we start over here with Councilman Andy Protegiro.
Well, I asked for your vote on May 3rd, and I do so because I don't require the on-the-job training. And I say that because I've sat at the council table, and yes, I've made bad decisions, and I've made, I think, great decisions. I've moved the city forward when I believed that we were doing the right thing, and I believe that I've focused on transparency since I've been there. I have the endorsements of other council members that I can work with, Tommy Smeagol, Mamie Johnson, Angela Graves, the vice mayor. Having those endorsements and understandings of City Hall and city government is significant. I came in as a reformer. You don't do anything alone. Council takes five people to move that ship. And being that reformer, I want to continue that reform, and I know that I can for you. So, May 3rd, I ask for your vote. Andy Pertegier for mayor. Thank you.
State Senator.
Thank you, Janet. Thank you, Kathy. Thank you, Virginia Pallett, for having us. Norfolk is indeed a wonderful place to live and a wonderful place to work, but our challenges are before us. It's going to take a person with temperament, a person with resources, a person with a proven record of getting things done, working in a bipartisan way to unlock our incredible potential. Our challenges in education and workforce development and sea level rise, it's going to take someone with the experience, with the relationships in Richmond and Washington, but also as it relates to having a sense of Norfolk and sensitive to the issues, from a civil league president to a planning commissioner to an economic development authority member and to a member of the House of Delegates. I have the vision, I have the passion, I have the temperament to get the job done. I ask you on May 3rd to vote for Kenneth Cooper Alexander for the next mayor of Norfolk.
Sheriff.
Well, I too am asking for your vote on May 3rd. I don't have a lot of elected officials. I joke, Kenny, I was waiting for the president maybe to come down this week.
He's happening.
The only one left that hasn't endorsed him. But, you know, I'm happy to have a lot of support from community leaders, civic leaders, and so forth. One of the things I've done in the last 22 years is I can go into any neighborhood in Norfolk and people will recognize me, know who I am. Very involved in the schools, very involved in the businesses. One of the things that we've done is we went from being investigated by the FBI to one of the best places to work by Inside Business, and we run a jail and we provide security in a court. I'd love to bring that leadership to City Hall. One of the things that we've been very successful at is building relationships in the communities, and that's one of the things I'd like to do, especially when it comes to the crime, is being able to work with the police, the city resources, and the community to be able to really make a difference. And I ask for your vote, and thank you again to all the stations and the newspaper.
State Senator, your website?
AlexanderForMayor.com.
All right, Sheriff McKay?
BobMcKayForMayor.com.
All right.
Andy Mayor, 2016.
Most of all, I think we want to thank our candidates who respected the rules that they set out, and I think we should really appreciate that. That has not always been the case in every debate we've ever had. But Election Day in the city of Norfolk is Tuesday, May 3rd, and we hope you've heard something in the course of the conversation that's helped you make a decision about who is best to lead Norfolk into a bright future. I hope you've enjoyed this debate among the three people who want to be the next mayor of Norfolk. The debate will actually telecast later this afternoon on WVEC-TV at 4 p.m. and again on WHRO on May 1st at 6 p.m. So you'll have two other televised opportunities to see it. As well, of course, you can view it online anytime, and there will be extensive coverage in today's editions of the Virginian Pilot in print and online at pilotonline.com. Thanks for listening today. We'll see you right back here tomorrow. Thank you.